Lordy, lordy, you guys.
Let's do this.
This podcast is 40.
Funyuns.
40.
Nick's been eating Funyuns, so things are going to be super fun.
Or oniony.
Besides the fact that we just recorded half a podcast and it just deleted for no reason.
Nope. We deleted it because it was not up to our high standards.
Yeah, so we're going to take it to the next level.
We are.
Yep.
What that said.
It begins.
So yeah, Big Planet Comics podcast. We are on the Facebook at / Big Planet Comics.
Don't say Facebook.
Facebook.com.
What's Facebook?
I don't know.
It's where bronies go?
That's where bronies go. Yeah, to talk about My Little Pony. That's horsey book. Where else are we?
Twitter?
Who are we?
We're the Big Planet Comics podcast. We said that already. All right, we're on Twitter. What is it? Twitter at Big Planet Comics?
Yeah, that's the way Twitter works. And you can subscribe on iTunes. Did we say that already?
No.
But who are we as people?
I'm Nick.
But like as a man.
Like as Zen consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. And what about you, Jared? Who are you?
I'm also a man.
I am Devo.
Kevin is Devo.
Kevin is Devo. Is Kevin not a man? No, he's Devo. Yeah, so should I say we've got signings coming up?
We should.
All right.
They're important ones.
We've got signings coming up.
The end.
The end. April 14th.
Saturday. This Saturday.
Saturday the 14th.
Or last Saturday, depending on when you're listening to this. I know a lot of people get behind because we talk a lot.
It's kind of scary. That just reminded me that Friday is the 13th.
Friday is the 13th. Terrible things happen on Friday the 13th.
So wait and come Saturday.
I hope nothing happens to Trad Moore.
That's true. Thanks.
What the hell?
Yeah, so speaking of Trad Moore and Nick talking about terrible things happening to him, he's going to come to Big Planet Comics and sign copies of Luther Strode along with Justin Jordan.
That'd be awesome if they're both there.
I hope they're both going to be there.
Yeah.
Unless Nick's wish comes true.
What about my wish? You're evil. I just am excited to see them, and I would hate for them not to be there.
Me too.
So what event are they celebrating by attending our fine event at the store?
I don't know.
The release of the Strange Talent.
Oh, yeah, true.
Book.
Which finally came out.
It did come out.
Thank God.
In nice soft cover collection.
In timely fashion.
Yep. It did.
And perfectly then we've got a poster as well.
A limited edition one.
Or we'll call it a print because it sounds fancier.
Yeah, lithograph.
It's a lithograph. It's a Gickly print.
Signed and numbered.
Signed and numbered.
Hasn't been signed yet, but
it will be here.
Hasn't been numbered yet.
Also be when they're here. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's going to be awesome. We're really excited about that because we all love Luther Strode.
Yes. Awesome.
Yeah. So, and then on May 5th, we got Free Comic Book Day.
Very soon. Another Saturday.
Holla. Yeah. And then Jeremy Whitley, who did Princess, will be there.
Yes, yep. He will.
We love that book.
We do.
And Jorge Aguirre, who did Giants Beware, will be there.
Which just came out.
And we're not gonna tell you how we feel about that book until later in the podcast. Ooh. So the suspense is building.
Foreshadowing.
Stay on your toes.
I wish I had a suspenseful song on my soundboard, but I don't. Dun, dun, dun. All right, yeah, so that's what's going on. We should do some viewer mail.
Let's do it.
Somebody sing a viewer mail song.
Viewer mail, viewer mail, it's not a whale.
It's viewer mail.
There you go.
There we go. all right, so let's see. What's our first question here?
We got a lot this time because we took a week off, so they've been building.
We do have a lot of questions. Let me do this first question. Is from Sam Marks, who has sent us questions before.
He has.
Marks with a KS or an X?
With an X.
Oh. We discussed this before. He was bitter about us talking about the various permutations of Marks.
Was he?
No, but he did mention it when he ran into me at the store.
He says, hey, guys, that's us.
That's us.
I'm loving Spaceman.
Ah, excellent.
And wanted to read some more Brian Azzarello.
Yes.
I picked up 100 Bullets, Trades 1 and 2 from the library, and I'm having a really hard time getting into it.
What?
Well, just let him finish, you guys.
Oh, maybe tripping.
He says, does it get better? Yes, it does get better.
Well, I don't know.
It's really good. If you finish book 2 and you do not like it, I don't think you're going to get much more out of it.
It does.
Book 2 sets up all the premises of it. So,
but book 2 is also just still that, like, people getting the 100 Bullets stuff, and it turns into more than that.
By book 2, it's kind of setting up the overarching storyline. Book 1 on its own is all short stories, and book 2 is short stories building up that stuff.
Well, book 1 is just the Dizzy story. Yeah. Book 2 is the guy with the wrapped up face story.
Yeah.
There might be books.
Or there might even be one before that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
But either way, he says he liked his Hellblazer run, so he feels like he should like it. We feel like you should like it as well.
Yeah, I feel like you should already like it.
Yeah. Is there any other stuff by him that's worth checking out?
Johnny Doubles, very good. We reviewed that. That's another crime story by him.
But isn't that just like 100 Bullets, but not as good?
Yeah, it's very much Hunter. Yeah. I would say the Flashpoint Batman.
That was good.
Oh, that was really good. Excellent. Yeah. Night of Vengeance. What other Batman book did he do?
Broken City. Broken That's City. Not that great.
Yeah.
It's all right.
It's all right.
Wow, what else has he done?
100 Bullets is definitely
Wonder
the
Woman.
Best.
You should read Wonder
Woman. Oh, yeah, you should read Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman. I was like, you don't write Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I was like, what are you talking about?
He's writing it right now.
He is writing it right now. And it's really,
really
good.
Really good.
Yeah. Yeah, but Spaceman is so good.
It is.
It's really good.
Yeah.
He said that already, though.
You should read Spaceman.
Yeah, get on that Spaceman.
Yeah, you should. I would say stick with 100 Bullets. Give it a little more time.
Yeah. Maybe like 3 to 8 more volumes.
There's some cool twists coming up.
Yeah, like... I don't know. It's not going to change a lot, but it might just start to click a little more.
Changes a lot about halfway through.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Around
halfway
issue
through, it gets into a different tone and just stays with that for the rest of the series. So.
Yeah, so try that out. All right. We got another question here.
What else
we do?
Yeah. It says, this question is from Mark Miller.
Hit me with your best shot.
I will, or he will. He says, hello, friends.
Hey.
Hello.
He's talking to us?
Yeah, I'm his proxy, so.
Oh, okay. He's not used to being called a friend by you.
Yeah, he says, the three huge comic book movies coming out this summer are Avengers, Amazing Spider-Man, and Dark Knight Rises. Based on what you have seen so far, and then there are three questions here. There are three of us.
Okay.
So, Nick, I'll let you ask his first question.
Oh.
All right, the first one.
A.
Which is going to be the best movie of the three?
I will say Avengers.
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 Man, this is too easy.
I mean...
I'm like cheating off you guys' sheets and they're all the same answer. I
feel like most other people would probably say Batman.
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing is...
Batman has like the weight of pretension and like art film behind it. So.
I feel like... I don't feel like the Batman movies have been really comic book movies. They feel like crime movies where like they wrote like a crime story and then kind of threw in Batman at the end.
That's,
I don't know.
No,
I mean, but that's what Batman kind is. Of is.
Yeah,
that's what it is now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like that, like up until like Frank Miller.
Which
sure,
was
it was
25
I mean,
years
the,
ago.
It was there was a lot of crazy stuff going on in Batman.
It's a different tone on Batman, but that's certainly part of
I
Batman.
I mean, he fights like aliens, and you know,
well, like in the '50s.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Nick's just sad about how Batman's evolved.
Like, nobody wants that Batman movie.
Yeah, except for you. Sorry.
I do. I really do.
See?
Well, yeah, but you want it because it'll be dumb.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
I'm not the biggest fan of the Batman movies, which is like sacrilege.
It is.
Amongst like superheroes.
Yeah, I
like
them a lot, but
I like them.
I feel like Avengers is just going to be a really good time. I mean, Joss Whedon's great with ensemble cast and... I feel like it'll have, you know, really fun dialogue and really cool character stuff, and that it'll just be a great like team building thing. And like, I feel that his actions, at least in the comics he's written, the superhero ones, the action scenes are really well thought out and plotted. So hopefully that'll translate to movie. It seems so far like it is. And Amazing Spider-Man is just, I'm just not too excited about it.
I think Amazing Spider-Man has more potential. To be good than people are giving it credit for.
Sure.
Just because Mark Webb directed 500 Days of Summer, which is a pretty solid movie,
I feel
like.
His name's Webb.
Yep, that's true. And Andrew Garfield was great in Social Network.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It seems like it could be all right.
It looks really good.
He's got good hair.
I'm just saying, it looks really good. I don't know. It's just like a new Spider-Man reboot seems kind of, I don't know, something.
Yeah.
I just hope that it's not a lot of origin story.
Yeah,
that's true.
There's definitely the potential for that.
Don't drive me crazy. I would just like hope they just drop you in the middle, like Spider-Man.
Based on the preview, I think the trailer that I think you're doomed.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's go to the second question because this is a 3-part question.
Question part B: which is going to be the most faithful adaptation of the spirit of the comics rather than of a specific comic book storyline? Which I think is what Nick was just talking about.
Definitely not Amazing Spider-Man. I feel like it looks a little more like dark than Spider-Man should be.
I think it'll be Avengers, but I think it'll be true to the spirit of the Ultimates.
The Ultimate Avengers,
which seems to kind of be what they've been going for with the movies.
Probably a little less mean spirited than Ultimates.
Well, because it's not Mark Miller.
Somewhere between Ultimates and like the real Avengers comics, like
The current, like, Bendis Avengers comics?
Yeah.
No, not the current one. Like, the
said real Avengers. What does that mean?
Like, you know, the general tone of Avengers throughout the decades. Okay. Like, the feel of it. Like, I mean, just like, in the preview where they show Iron Man or Captain America telling Hulk to smash.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's
and
fun.
And C, which will make the most money.
Oof.
God.
I think Batman will make the most money.
You think so?
Well, Batman 2 is like the like the number 2 movie of all time.
Yeah,
or
but
something.
No, but see, that had like the tragedy of Heath Ledger, so drawing in like people who didn't really follow superhero movies, that sort of thing, and Heath Ledger giving an astounding performance, and it had Joker, and it got critically acclaimed by like critics.
Those are all reasons that the new one will make more money. You know, it's like it's so like people liked it like a lot.
Yeah, it's not like I don't think anybody who saw the second one isn't going to go see the third one.
Yeah,
and no, some people won't.
But it might be close. I don't know. I think Avengers is going to make a lot of money.
I think Avengers has the potential to make
Avengers
a lot of money.
First in the release schedule.
Yeah, it comes out in May.
Because then it might just get something there of just like a big building hype on it and everything.
We'll see. I mean, I feel like Avengers could make a lot of money.
Yeah. I will definitely say not Spider-Man.
All these guys are going to be stacking cheddar, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
These are all going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, that's definitely true. All right, so we've got two more questions, but then we also got a voicemail this week.
Holy moly.
What?
Yeah, so this voicemail was anonymous.
Whoa. Did we throw out the voicemail number?
Oh, we didn't tell people. Well, I'll tell them after.
Okay.
Because then they'll be like, oh, I want to do that.
It's true. All
right. They will right after they hear
so
it.
So this voicemail is a little bit creepy.
Are
we doing that now?
That's all we
We're doing that now.
Let's do it.
And then by virtue of being anonymous, it's made so much creepier. So, Nick, this directly addresses you.
It does.
Does it really?
Yeah. You ready?
Okay.
Guys, I just want to say you guys do a great job and keep it up. I enjoy listening to the podcast. And I gotta say, I think Nick's probably got the sexiest voice out of all of you. So keep up the good work. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks, anonymous caller.
The weird thing about that is I was waiting to like recognize the voice and I don't recognize. That's really scary.
That's not scary. That's awesome. Congratulations, Nick, on winning sexiest voice of the podcast.
Yeah, congratulations. Well, thanks for sending in the voicemail, anonymous person that is in love with Nick.
Yeah. So in the future, if anyone would like to call in and leave thing, you could also leave your name if you wish.
Yeah, which we didn't tell people to do.
No, I'm just saying you could.
But they should have known.
If you want to buy me a gift, I like malt liquor and onions.
Don't go down that path because you've been down that path before.
Yeah.
So the number is 703-539-CAST.
Cast.
I made sure that happened.
Yep.
It wasn't just happenstance.
Oh, really? I thought it was just like the universe aligning to make the podcast awesome.
We bought it from a fishing hotline.
We did that.
A fishing podcast that went out of business.
That's fishing hotline. Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
All right. So,
wow. Well, that's still... Thanks.
Yeah, no, thanks. So. I feel like Nick is going to be like checking somebody out at the store. Yeah. And then when he's done, they're going to be like, ciao. And he's going to be like, whoa.
It's you.
It's happening.
He is blushing slightly right now.
He is. Yeah, he's all flustered. He's drunk, though.
That might be the Funyuns.
All right. So our next question is from a guy named Paul Vodra.
Yep.
Have you guys ever heard of him?
Pivo. I hear he's in a band.
He is in a band. He's in a band with me.
Ew. He's also...
Never mind.
We're a punk band. We're called Gladiator Cop.
Are you?
.bandcamp.com.
Nice. Plug.
We should just change our name to gladiatorcop.bandcamp.com.
That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing. So he says, what are your thoughts on the recently released Eisner nominations? I think they're good.
Eisner?
I think they're good that it happened. How do they line up with your best of 2011 picks?
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I have a lot of Eisner picks here, but I don't know. Do we want to go through these?
Let's go through the ones that match up.
Yeah, why don't you mention the ones that either match or ones that they did that we never even considered? Because I think that's more interesting.
Yeah, so...
discrepancies.
There were a couple of things that I thought were kind of things we talked about, including that like categories that they have, like best short story.
Sure.
I think that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, the Eisners definitely have a huge amount of categories, and they cover a lot more stuff than we tried to do.
Ooh, also, I like to mention that one of the things they have our best single issue on there, the Daredevil one.
Yeah, yep. Daredevil number 7.
Is it the one that we picked?
No, we picked Uncanny X-Force number 18.
No, but wasn't it Daredevil 8 we put up?
No, it was 7. The snow story. Yeah, Snowblind.
Well, good call, Nick.
Yeah, and Ganges 4, which I think was also one of our choices.
Yep.
And they had Princeless 3 as best one of their best individual issues.
That's the one
cool.
where Adrian is like trying on all the different costumes. Oh, yeah. Riffing on superhero stuff. So obviously it hit home with a lot of people.
So best continuing series, they had Daredevil, which was our winner for that.
Yep, yep.
Best limited series, they had Who is Jake Ellison There, which was our choice.
Correct.
They have a bunch of kids sections all together, and actually they have like three separate sections for kids stuff.
But age group?
Yeah, but none of them had Bad Island, which was our choice.
Oh, wow.
Boo.
And none of them had the Karl Barks book, which I wonder if that had to do with timing or something.
No. Came out pretty close to the end of the year.
That's weird.
That is a little weird.
And also that Barks one had like some all that weird African stuff. So that's the only reason I think they might not have put it on there.
Oh, yeah. Like maybe it's more for collectors than kids.
Yeah.
But other it's also that, not in crazy. Best reprint, so I don't know.
What? Yeah. They're insane.
yeah, they have a couple other weird things like best humor publication. But best graphic novel, they had Habibi in there, which was our choice, and Tale of Sand, which we came pretty close.
Yeah.
And then they have a best reality-based work, which included Green River Killer, which we just had in our best graphic novels. They had Death Ray in there for best reprint. They have the Walt Disney Mickey Mouse stuff, but still not the Karl Barks. Yeah.
Ooh, how about best writer? What do they got?
Best writer did not have Scott Snyder, who was our choice.
Wow. Yeah,
but did have Jeff Lemire, who was on our list. But and best artist. Well, it's weird because they have best art, best penciler, inker, or penciler, inker team.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. But they had Marcus Martin, who was pretty high up on our stuff, and Ramon Perez, who also was in there. But then they have a best writer-artist thing, which has Craig Thompson, who was our winner.
Yeah.
And then the rest just kind of don't really fit in with our other categories.
Yeah. Were there any, like, though, that just they put on that you've never heard of? Or that we
best comic-related?
Oh, yeah, they have some esoteric categories. But, like, anything that just we should have thought of or that
there were a couple things. There was, like, in best graphic novel... Where was that?
They had Freeway, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, no. In best reality-based work, there was a book called Around the World, which I don't know at all.
Who did that one?
I've seen it.
Matt Phelan.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, Candlewick Press. So, beyond that, I mean, I think we had most of this stuff. There was a kid's book in here that I hadn't heard of.
And really, we read a lot more books than they do, probably.
Yeah,
the Ferret's Foot. We don't have that.
I don't know. Yeah, that's one of the only things on there I had no idea
about. I think that's the one good thing about the Eisners is that they get more submissions from, like, book publishers. So if there's, like, especially, like, a kid's book that's, like, maybe more an illustrated book than a comic book, you know, there's some wavering lines on categories there.
No, I mean, they don't have a lot of superhero stuff in here.
Interesting.
I mean, but they do have Daredevil. But but Uncanny X-Force does not make it into this anywhere in here at all. Which, you know, I mean, comics are obviously more than that, but I think Uncanny X-Force is an outstanding
book. They probably hate the X stuff.
Yeah.
I can see it as, like, this is trying to do something more, like, you know, not artistic, but, like, you know, they're trying to look at the whole medium, and we are coming at it from, like, the ground level, and the Eisner judges rotate every year, and they're typically, like, one person who's a comic book retailer, one person who's a journalist who covers comic books, one person who is a comic book creator of some sort, and then the other two are, like, kind of nebulous categories. I don't know how they pick these people, but they kind of rotate around. So they definitely get, like, a broader look at comic books than we do, but I think we know more.
Yeah, you heard that, Eisners? We know more than you.
Yeah, we do.
We have thrown down the gauntlet.
We're so smart.
I honestly think we read more stuff than the people that do the Eisner.
I think we were talking about it the other day. We think that Nick maybe reads more comics than anybody in the entire
planet.
Earth.
Planet.
I couldn't imagine that anybody reads more comics than I do. I feel like I read like 2,000 pages of comics a week.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, we read like 800 pages just for the podcast. And I read like a lot of comics.
And then I told Jared you read every Marvel book, which I think is close to being true.
Pretty close. I read all but like maybe one or two.
Which ones don't you read?
Yeah. Nightfall.
I couldn't even mention that.
That's DC.
Oh.
I don't even know.
Yeah, see, I think you read all of them.
See, now that's
almost
all
of them.
Do you read Avenging Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I'm behind.
That's everything.
Yeah. Done.
I'm behind on a few things, but.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean,
I definitely read most.
That's pretty nutty, though.
All right. So I'm going to count next week how many pages you've read.
We'll
come back.
Next week when you read, just put it in a pile or write it down, and then we'll count up how many pages it was.
All right.
Jared, speaking of numbers,
you
have a list of numbers sitting in front of you right there.
All right. So like we told you guys the last podcast, we were doing the early release party for Avengers versus X-Men number one. which came out last Tuesday. And we had a good amount of people show up. Some stores had food and cupcakes and stuff. Some stores didn't because we were just selling comic books. But
that's your cupcake update for the podcast.
Yes. Intriguingly, at the Vienna store, we started a very scientific poll of asking random people when they came up, which team would you pick and or support, Avengers or X-Men?
The way I did it was we had the Avengers buttons and the X-Men buttons. And when people were getting one, I was like, you have to pick one.
Yes. You must choose now.
Yeah. Well, who's in the lead now?
All right. So this is updated over the last week. We've got Avengers with 25.
Nice.
X-Men with 22.
Ooh.
And most importantly, we also started this question on our Facebook page. There's a poll up if you want to go vote on this, which let people write in votes, which is the best thing. I believe it was Joe wrote in Peter Parker, Astounding Spider-Ham. And he is tied with the Avengers, with the X-Men trailing on that one as well.
Nice. I think I put Wong in as my choice.
Wong is in the running.
And you said to give the reason. I just said because he's a badass.
Yeah.
I wish I still had that sound effect.
Oh, God, that was good.
I would use it all the time.
Marvel's bottom line and Marvel Comics in general are both also written in and doing quite well in the running. So
Marvel Comics in general?
Yeah, just like Marvel Comics are going to win in Avengers versus X-Men.
Well, that's probably true because they're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So we got one more question. Is that right? Yeah. One more question.
It's a doozy.
But this is a doozy.
This is a good one.
This is a doozy of a question.
This one I want to put up on the Facebook too as a poll because my God, it's amazing.
All right. Well, we can do that. We can make that happen. We have the technology. It says, "Yo, Bamps.
What up?
That's us. A bit of painful choose your own adventure. If sure. you were forced to read one of the following hypothetic graphic novels with great art / terrible writing,
oof,
under the below described conditions." This is very scientific. Yeah. Which would you choose? Note that you have to read it and not just look at the art. So I'm going to pass this around. Jared, you can read number one here because I think that this one directly concerns you.
Yeah, these are important, that not only the setup, but how we have to discuss these. So number one is Corto Maltese and the Odyssey on the Expanding Earth, written by Neil Adams, and art by Hugo Pratt in the, unfortunately, Rizzoli colored / randomly ordered cut up panels format with no less than 300 words per page. You would then have to discuss the exciting world of comics to a group of junior high school students in their school library and summarize the plot.
All right. So we'll choose at the end, right?
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Oh, we got to read all of these.
All right. What's number two?
We got the Extreme X-Men Age of Apocalypse 2099, written by Scott Lobdell and Howard Mackey, with art by Milo Manara.
Oh, well, all right.
Is it Milo or Milo?
Milo
sounds better.
Milo Manara.
With foil cover by Rob Liefeld.
No.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Note that all the characters in the book is in quotation marks, are male. You would then have to discuss the exciting world of comics to a group of junior high school. Oh, no, I went back. Hold on. You have then to discuss the graphic novel at the next X-Men movie premiere and how it is accessible to fans of the movie.
Gross.
All right. Okay. Right. What's three?
Yeah, Milo Manara book with only dudes. Yeah. So it won't be as good as The Amazing X-Women by Chris Claremont and Milo Manara. Yeah,
that's true.
Oh, that book is so gross. All right. Number three is Lady Death / Tarot Infinite Breasticles. It's written by Brian Polito and Jim Ballant, of course.
That's a double combo.
Super team. With art by Adam Hughes, which is, you know, with a variant thong photo cover by the team behind the Mark Miller Trouble photo covers. If you guys don't know what those are, well, I think we've talked about them.
Google it
and pray.
Yeah, and turn moderate safe search off. You would have to read this in public or in front of your girlfriend, wife, / significant other while telling them, her or him, how comics should be a more respected medium.
Oh, wow. No.
Oh, jeez, there's still two more. All right, I'm going to pass this back to Nick.
All right, let's see. Next up, we got Justice Society of America / Invaders crossover.
Sounds good.
The 70-year continuity correction adventure. Written by Roy Thomas.
Oh, gross.
With art by Brian Boland.
Huh?
There are no less than 50 words of purple prose per page. With character dialogue, then restating the purple prose, which is already clearly shown by the artwork. Note, you also have to read the 100-page essay at the end and 10-page intro by Stan the Manly. Then give an interview to the Washington Post dispelling the rumor that comics are for man-children obsessed with superheroes, nostalgia, and recycled storytelling.
Wow. All right. And then finally, there's the fifth one. Arsenal and the DC Super Pets, a public service graphic novel about domestic pet abuse and drug addiction, plotted by James Robinson, written by J.T. Krull, and drawn by super detailed artist Juan Jose Rip.
Nice.
But note...
Pet abuse by Juan Jose Rip.
Yeah. Note that there is a 10-page sequence in an alley with Arsenal and Beppo the Super Monkey beating on each other with the corpse of Streaky the Super Cat. You then have to offer to hand the book out at a PETA rally, local elementary school during Drug Awareness Week, and give an interview to Fox 5 about how comics can be powerful educational tools for our youth.
Been there, done that.
All right, so what are you guys picking here? These are... Oh, and this is... Sorry for the verbose question. Best regards, Planeteer Rob.
Thanks, Planeteer Rob.
Thanks, Planeteer Rob.
Those are good questions. Wow.
I got Justice Society Invaders.
No, like... It's like the most horrible, like Chris Claremont with the panel and the picture and the dialogue all describing the same thing. You'd go insane.
But I'd like to see Brian Boland drawing the Justice Society standing side by side with the Invaders. It'd be pretty cool. And
that's true.
I'd be interested to see what Stan the Man Lee had to say for that.
For 100 pages.
Yeah. And
wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Lady Deathterra one is pretty gross.
Oh, God.
I don't know. The Extreme X-Men one.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Right, so you got yours.
Yeah.
You go with it,
Jared. Right. What about you? What do you got?
Oh man, like the Arsenal one's almost compelling, just because it would be insane with like the super pets. But oh wow, what was the second one? The Milo Manara.
Yeah.
Like I would do it if he was drawing like female characters. Like he could draw guys okay, and they're like good looking people. But like his whole point is he draws beautiful women.
Yeah.
You heard it here. Jared likes good looking guys.
I do.
Drawn by Milo Manara.
I do.
So I know which one you're going to pick then.
I got to go with Hugo Pratt.
Yep. Well, because even if it's just awful,
it would be
like new Hugo Pratt, right?
Yeah. It'd be, I would be amazed to see him draw that stuff.
So
no
matter
how destroyed the art was.
I'm going to go with Arsenal and the DC Super Pets. Only because I read Justice League Rise of Arsenal number 3 like 10 times.
Really?
It was really funny.
It cracks me. J.T. Krull, the most aptly named man in comics, dude cracks me up. He's so bad.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, people will recognize him in the future. He's like a modern day
Chuck
Fletcher
Austin.
Hanks. He's a modern day. He's a modern day Chuck Austin.
Like just that single issue of Rise of Arsenal will be reprinted like a deluxe oversized comic.
But Fantagraphics is gonna like reprint that with like a 100-page essay by Gary Groff.
Yeah,
and I won't read that essay, but I will read that comic.
Yeah.
So thanks for the question.
Yeah, that was
awesome. Thanks for the questions, everybody.
Yeah, these were all great ones.
Thank you, everyone. So send us questions at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com.
Please.
And I will mention this again to call our podcast hotline.
Yes.
What's that number?
1-703-5
something about fishing.
1-703-539-CAST.
539-CAST.
Yeah, so.
And this will be up on the Big Planet Comics page. Just go there, click on the podcast link, and we'll have the phone number.
If you're listening to this, just go there.
Just do that
while you're driving.
Yeah, so
you're doing.
Yeah, we say it all the time, but I think the questions are the most fun part of the podcast because we get to do those, and then we have to review like a million books.
I'm dreading it already.
Yeah. So speaking of that, you guys want to do some reviews? Let's do it.
We love comics; they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
Hey, it is time for reviews. Good job, Song.
Yep. Yeah.
You're awesome.
I think the most important thing about the reviews is that having taken a week off last week, a huge amount of stuff came out. This week, a huge amount of stuff came out. So we will do a few extra next week.
Yeah, we're definitely going to Nick didn't get a chance to read Flex Mentallo. So that's a book that there's a lot to say about. And I'll be curious to see what he has to say about it.
Yeah,
and just a couple other things. But we'll get to him eventually.
Yep, yep.
So don't complain or whatever. But if you do want to complain, @BigPlanetComics, Twitter. Because Jared handles that. So
I was like, wait a minute.
Leave us a voicemail.
Yeah. So first up, we've got 1999 by Noah Van Sciver. This is a new
retrofit
book. They've been doing a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And this is kind of Noah Van Sciver's Shiver. I think it's Sciver. Whatever.
Skyver.
This is kind of his book about a lazy dude during Y2K.
Yeah, like literally it's happening right before the Y2K panic that was around the end of 1999 when no one knew if the internet was going to explode and the world would blow up or whatever. But it's just this slacker dude who ends up working at, like, is it a convenience store?
A sub shop.
A sub shop. Yeah. All right. And just he's living at home with his mom, who's kind of off in her own world, and just his terrible life where he's got literally nothing going on. It's self-reflection. And then he finds out that he's got this really cute coworker who is married but has an open relationship, and he kind of starts getting a huge crush on her, and just what weird, terrible things happen, and is his life going to go anywhere? And it was awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I like his art style a lot. It's loose, but he's really good at getting across what he's trying to get across. The story is very sad and
depressing.
Yeah, it's definitely depressing, but
compelling.
Yeah, like, but compelling.
I wanted
definitely
to know what happened to
him. So. And yeah, I don't know. It's the kind of thing where, you know, there's kind of a crazy thing that happens.
Yeah, this is the perfect kind of done in one kind of issue. Like, it's like a pretty straightforward story, and you get everything you need out of it, and then the ending has like a real punch to it. It's great.
Yeah, it's very good. And yeah, I would,
to flash back to our Eisner questions, that was one of the things about the Eisners I had a complaint with, is their short story options, like best short comic short story, were really weird or lame. And this is like the sort of thing I thought should have been nominated for those. And
well, this is from this year, but yeah.
No, but there's
some of the retrofit stuff. I don't know. There were some good things in there. Like,
but they only had like four options or something.
Yeah,
whatever,
but there was like a Brandon Graham short story, and that, the part of the last issue of Optic Nerve that I liked a lot. But
two.
Yeah. Anyway. But overall, this was a really good issue. It was, a lot different from the other retrofit stuff, I feel like, just in that it wasn't as,
they've all been kind of different.
They've all been really weird, though.
Well, I don't know. The one about the bandits was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and the one about just like a day in the life with his kid. And
oh, yeah, that's true.
Been all
that's
over
true.
The place,
I guess,
but, yeah.
I think of like Bowman and Raw Power.
Those are bananas.
Yeah, but yeah, this is keeping up with the high quality of those books. And I mean, if you like indie comics, like kind of slice of life stories, it's really well done. And yeah, I think Noah Van Sciver is a really good artist, and more people should be checking him out. His Blammo series that he does is great, and this is also really good stuff.
Yes, sir.
Cool. All right, so moving on to The Alabaster Wolves, number 1 of 5. This is by Caitlin R. Kiernan, who what people know her from. She wrote Death at Death's Door, which I think was like the third Death miniseries. And this is drawn by Steve Lieber, who drew
Whiteout.
Yeah, he drew Whiteout and a bunch of other stuff. Did he draw Ghost Project?
No, man, maybe
something like that.
Oh no, he did the underground, that cave spelunking.
Oh yeah.
Rangers one.
Yeah,
that was, yeah.
But
he's great.
Yeah, this is a kind of, it's a new Dark Horse book, but I'd say it's very much in the Vertigo vein.
Vertigo Hellboyish.
Yeah, Jared, sort of. You were saying this was based on a book.
Yeah, at the end of it, apparently it says that this is a very popular character based on a series of novels.
Oh,
which
really?
Yeah, exactly. Like, which I thought was good, that there was no sense of this, that you had to have read a series of books to get into it, or, you know, if you didn't know what this character was. She did a very good job of introducing this girl who is basically sitting on a bus stop waiting for a bus to show up, and has apparently been cursed or has demons talking. There's supernatural elements to her life, and there's the implication that she's had some adventures or something beforehand, but it really felt like this is a well-written, you know, that there's background that I know as a writer, but you don't need to know. And
it takes place in sort of a post-apocalyptic world, seems like.
I think it's just the place where they are is like an abandoned
like
bus station.
They're like some terrible part of the South. Yeah.
Yeah, and this kind of focuses on a single encounter with one person that is a supernatural type being. Yeah. And uses that as kind of the way to set up who this character is and like kind of what she does. And I thought it was interesting. I thought sometimes I feel that Caitlin Kiernan sometimes tends to overwrite a little bit.
Oh, really?
She can be overly descriptive.
It's a lot of purple prose.
Yeah, a lot of purple prose. Things get a little florid sometimes, kind of like in a Neil Gaiman way.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought it was interesting. I mean, you know, it was a kind of a cool start to what will hopefully be a bigger story.
I'll say a little bit about her, that the girl is supposed to be like either cursed or on some sort of crazy mission to fight supernatural monsters, and hence my Hellboy reference.
Well, the cool thing that's like she talks to like this flaming three-headed angel,
right,
that tells her what to do.
Yeah, so like that's what I thought was awesome about this, is like crazy. The Steve Lieber art so not grounds it because it's so fantastic, but just like throws in so much extra stuff behind even the dialogue. They're just like, what's going on back here? And yeah,
it's very interesting. And yeah, interesting to see where this goes from here, because it's pretty simple. It's like her talking to somebody at a bus stop, and they have a crazy encounter. And
I feel like it'll be, this is the start of what will become a bigger story.
Right. But this stands on its own really well. Just want to check out an issue. Yeah. This is a good story.
Yeah. So that's Alabaster Wolves. All right. Next up, we've got America's Got Powers, number 1.
What?
by Jonathan Ross, who is a talk show host in England.
Yep.
And also wrote Turf, with art by Brian Hitch. Most people probably know him from Ultimates or Fantastic Four or Ultimates 2. Yeah. I thought this was a cool. This is a six-issue miniseries. Basically, it sets up this world where a bunch of people get superpowers. There's kind of an event that gives people superpowers.
It's like Rising Powers, boom, a bunch of people have superpowers.
Yeah, it's definitely very similar to Rising Stars. And the public kind of reacts in a weird way to these people with superpowers.
This hinted at, like, possible, like, when they all got powers, they kind of had a huge, like uprising.
Yeah.
Or they were, like, put people in concentration camps. There's some weird hints at a very dark background, and there's certainly, like, a lot of hatred towards these superpowered people. Yeah. And, so, like, almost, like, racial, like, epithets. Like, things are being yelled at these people, which is pretty interesting.
And so, because of that, this thing has risen up called America's Got Superpowers, which is, like, a very popular TV show in this world that's, you know, very much like America's Got Talent or something, but mixed with the Hunger Games, I'd say.
Yeah.
And basically, these heroes fight for a spot on this super team, like a Justice League type team.
Yeah.
And
which I think might be the only officially allowed superhero team or something.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. From what I could tell. And so the story focuses on a guy who is part of this group but has, like, a power level of zero.
Yeah, he was affected by this thing that made everyone get superpowers but has no powers.
Yeah, so he has to work as, like, a mascot for the show and,
janitor
and cleans up and stuff. Yeah. But basically, things go really crazy, and he gets pretty heavily involved in what's going on.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if the Hunger Games is the best comparison. In some ways, it's like Survivor. Like, it's really televised, and they're referring throughout this that the last season, did someone die on it? And so that was, like, kind of the next step forward. Yeah. And but even though someone died, it became, like, the most highest rated episode ever. So this season, they're pushing for even more violence, and, like, this will be a very deadly show for these people to come.
Yeah, like, it's kind of becoming The Hunger Games, basically, or, like, Running Man.
Yeah, that's what I thought was interesting. There's, like, this evolution of, like, almost entertainment to, like, beyond entertainment.
But there's also that whole thing in Hunger Games where, like, there's a lot behind the show. Like,
that's
more, like, politically based. Like, all the... There's, like, a bunch of generals that are like, oh, we need to stop the show because blah, blah, blah. And, like, you know.
Which is why I think this relates to that, because it kind of seems like a way to quell this uprising.
Right.
Yeah. So,
these powered people,
But I thought it was really good.
Really interesting.
Know, I've talked on here before about how I get kind of tired of these, like, new takes on superhero things.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just, like, you know, some of them just aren't as good as other ones to me, because I thought this was really well delivered. Hitch's art is great for this because he does that kind of widescreen cinematic thing, which I think is really apropos.
Yeah, this works really good for both drama and action, and this has got plenty of both.
Yeah, and it's a good start. And it's a double size issue, so a lot of bang for your $2.99.
Yeah,
this
so
follows
cheap
up
issue,
on
twice as long.
Follows up on Saga with the kind of double size issue for $2.99, which is great.
Yeah, it's a good way to kick off a series.
Yeah,
we're
talking about that today, that like we've done so many reviews of issue twos to see if, like, premises finally play out or it keeps up or whatever, and here you get two issues for one.
And then for anybody who's read Turf, which is Jonathan Ross's previous thing,
right?
He's learned a little more. It's a little less wordy.
Yeah, I think he's a little more economical with his storytelling.
He knows
in this,
like, how comic writing as opposed to...
Which he kind of did a little bit near the end of Turf, but, like, the first few issues of Turf were, like, super wordy.
Turf number one especially was like panels where there was just like word balloons.
But he's definitely got it perfected now, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, he's a good writer. You see a lot of people, you know, cross over from other media into comics, and they don't always tend to do the best job.
Yeah, right.
But I feel like he's doing a good job with this, and I'm definitely really interested in seeing where this is going to go.
Me too. It's really good.
All right, next we've got Annie Sullivan and the Trials of Helen Keller by Joseph Lambert. Man, this was a really good book.
Yeah, this is published by the Center for Cartoon Studies?
Yeah, the same people that did
Houdini.
They did the Amelia Earhart book, and they did the Satchel Paige book.
Right, so they've done all these really great based in historical figure things. And so I just saw it, and it's a nice production thing, but I didn't realize it was Joseph Lambert at first. So I was just like, oh, whatever. And then I was like, holy crap, this is amazing. Because what did he do? He did I Will Bite You.
I Will Bite You, which is a collection of short stories. And
so much attention. And
he's done stuff really in the anthologies and stuff. But he's still, I would say, a fairly new guy on the scene. And this book is about Annie Sullivan, who was basically hired by Helen Keller's parents to be her kind of like a nanny, but also a teacher.
Right.
And it tells two stories, one about Annie Sullivan when she was younger, and she was in this, I think it's called the Perkins School for the Blind and Deaf, where she was kind of for the time, part of a very, like, what would be, like, a more standard way to learn for, like, deaf kids.
Yeah.
And those experiences play off in and sort of affect the, I was going to say more current story, but, you know, it's the... like her as an adult teaching Helen Keller and kind of coming up with these new techniques on her own, which are, I mean, really interesting and I would imagine were very revolutionary at the time.
Yeah, it's definitely fascinating how they show, especially through the art, because you see a lot of, like, there's, like, it starts off, like, very just dark and, like, kind of vague
shapes,
figures of
colors.
Things.
Yeah, the things you see through, like, kind of Helen Keller's eyes.
Yeah, and then you slowly see her learn how to put names on stuff, and it's interesting, because they show, like, pictures of, like, the environment, and it's, like, dog, splash, like, you know, it's written on everything that's happening. And
yeah, it's like
cool.
Her vocabulary slowly builds, and so, I mean, because, like, this story has been, Helen Keller's been told in so many books and in plays and in movies and stuff, but this, you're, like, actually experiencing it and how she would have experienced it. So just the beginning, like, his cartooning is so well done.
It's interesting because, yeah, I mean, it's visual. It's very, like, I don't know. It's hard to describe. I feel like it would be hard to describe any other way than this.
Yeah, that's why I say it's just so such a perfect way to show
it. I feel
it.
Like I clearly understood exactly how she was learning and how she was building on stuff. And it was
Which is great because Joe Lambert has done kind of short things before, and this is the first really long thing I've seen from him. But he's, he's just such a natural, I feel like. I mean, his art's always been great, but the storytelling in this and the sort of dramatic narrative and just how the whole thing plays out is really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we're just talking about the Helen Keller stuff, but like Kevin said, this has so much to do with Annie. What's her last name?
Annie Sullivan. Yeah.
Like, her life is fascinating, too. Like, she didn't just, like, go to the school. Like, when she was a kid, like, her parents died, and she was in, like, this terrible, like, asylum almost with her younger brother and just that. And then, like, there's this huge drama about Helen Keller writing a fictional story when she's grown up, which then people later accuse her of plagiarizing from someone else, and just there's all, and then like she runs in all these famous people. That's just like so much more than just that Helen Keller learned to sign. It's so much more story to it, and he does a great job.
But at the core, it's about like her relationship with
the two of them
Helen
together.
Keller,
yeah,
and kind of matching that up with maybe her relationship with her teachers when she was younger, and especially her relationship with her brother.
Yeah,
and it ends up really being a story about how, you know, it's like it's good to have someone to lead on when it's a pretty emotional story.
It's one of those like kind of traditional stories where two people become better because of each other, like learn how to, like, you know, they find their faults with each other through their experiences together, which is, you know, kind of like seems like something that's pretty done a lot and like.
But it's such a basic thing that, you know, it can be, anything.
But it's and done so well.
And it's really done
this
very
would be
well.
A great fictional book, but it's true.
Yeah. And then, like Jared was talking about the plagiarism thing, I found that part really interesting. And what was nice is in the back of the book, there's a lot of
text and footnotes
that kind of delve into some of the aspects a little more and like give little bios of characters that maybe just had small parts in the book, but they expand on that. And yeah, no, it's a fantastic book. I think to me, it's already one of my favorite things that's come out this year. Actually,
it's amazing.
Which I guess I wasn't surprised because I really like Joe Lambert, but I was really surprised at sort of the depth of the book and just how compelling it was. It's great stuff. It's definitely worth checking out. Yes, I would recommend it to anybody.
Yeah,
yeah. That's Annie Sullivan and the Trials of Helen Keller. It's good stuff. All right, next up we got Courtney Crumrin, Number One by Ted Naifa. Go ahead, Jared.
Yeah, so I knew Ted Naifa from Polly and the Pirates, but I had never read any of Courtney Crumrin. This was kind of his breakout book. He had first done, he served as an artist on Gloom Cookie, which is a very gothy, like,
very
directed
gothy.
At the gothy kids. Like, goths love this comic. And then after that, he went on, he said, I want to do my own thing, and he started Courtney Crumrin. So there have been three miniseries and maybe some short stories, and this is probably the fourth ongoing. The first one that's time it's been in color.
Yeah, and this is the only ongoing. The other ones were always meant to be mini
series.
Yeah, I actually read Gloom Cookie. I hated it, but I loved his art so much that I read it.
He's so good. So the original one also, they re-released the first story, Courtney Crumrin and the Night Things, in a very nice hardcover this week too. So if you haven't read it, like me, you can go pick it up. So I read that before I read this series,
and that's recolored as well. Which
yes,
is nice.
And it looks really
I still haven't
nice.
Read that. Yeah.
Okay,
I'd need to.
Well, do you want to do your take on it without having read the prequel, and then I'll do some back. All right.
Well, after this, I really want to read those. This is pretty great. I mean, I don't know. The thing I would compare it most to would be kind of like a Harry Potter type thing. It's got that same tone where it's kind of fun and like it's like this girl in this magical world that's parallel with ours, but it's still got that kind of weird melancholy tone that's in Harry Potter a lot.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's this first issue is they did a good thing by having a new character introduced that's kind of separate from all of this, and so she's kind of a way for the new readers to, you know, get a glimpse into this world and start meeting all the characters as she meets them. And I felt like I knew a lot about this world by the end of like one issue,
right?
And it's got a lot of cool little twists in there and little hints at like the bigger world. But yeah, it's just like pretty good, straightforward fantasy stuff.
Yeah, the thing that's interesting about it is having read the first mini, the Night Things first, this one in a lot of ways is like almost a retread of the first storyline, but with now this additional new girl she meets. Really? Yeah, so there's a lot of comparison. The first book is Courtney Crumren is and her parents move into her great uncle's creepy, haunted type mansion in this town, where everyone knows him as like the crazy, creepy old dude up on the hill, you know. And she goes to school. Nobody likes her. She's like this weird outcast kid. And she quickly discovers that her uncle, in fact, does know magic, and like magic is real. And she starts learning magic from him on the sly, but also a little with some help from him.
That's kind of what happens here through the new character.
So there's a lot of comparisons about how this new girl, and she's like kind of introducing her to magic. But there's also a lot of monsters running around and goblins. There's very much like a kind of Neil Gaiman-esque, like Nick said, like fantastic world that's just behind what everyone knows about. But there's also some really dark stuff. Like, literally, in the first book, a kid gets eaten by monsters, and it's just like, and is never seen again. You're like, what?
Yeah, this has a very dark, melancholy tone throughout. I mean,
And I think they mentioned that kid in the new volume.
They do,
There's like a missing poster up on a tree.
Yeah.
No, I thought like what Nick said, the new one does a really good job of immersing the reader into the world but through this character. But then, you know, things like they are in the other Courtney Crumren books, things are never quite as they seem. So it kind of takes a twist towards the end. I'm excited that this is an ongoing. I've loved the Courtney Crumren books for a really long time, and I'm glad to see the original ones being recolored because I think the coloring in this actually is a standout. I think it looks great. And so it's just like a cool book. If you like stuff like Bone or Amulet or Polly and the Pirates, it's just... Yeah.
The coloring in this is so good that my girlfriend, who doesn't really read comics, was like walking around and she's like, what's this? And she looked like, this coloring is great. I want to read this.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, all right. Cool.
Yeah. So Courtney Crumren, definitely check it out.
Yep.
It's good stuff. Next up, we've got Danger Club number 1 by Landry Q. Walker and Eric Jones. This is kind of another of these that I was talking about a minute ago of like taking the superhero thing and putting a little twist on it.
The basic setup of this is that all the superheroes on Earth went into space to fight something you're not quite sure what it is.
A cosmic level,
but something
threat.
Probably like, you know, like the Phoenix Force
or Galactus
something. And none of them came back, and so everybody that's left that has superpowers is basically like their sidekicks,
their teen sidekicks,
smaller heroes, and some of them start kind of a cult.
There's definitely a turn towards the darker side of like, well, we're in charge now, are we going to take over the world? Or,
and basically it seems like the world's kind of in ruins already, and a group of heroes is trying to rally all of the younger heroes together to get ready for whatever the thing was that the heroes went into space to fight, which is still coming towards Earth,
right?
And that's basically what you get in the first issue.
With a lot of fighting.
Yeah, it's a cool setup. It's got a little bit of that, I don't know what to, like a little bit of a Warriors vibe at the beginning where there's like, you know, a guy who's like putting together all the disparate groups to fight the man and take over over the country or whatever. And
20,000 hardcore members.
It's cool. Yeah, I love
it. Yeah, the power struggle in it is pretty interesting. And, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was fun. It did feel like
it's one of those superhero things.
Yeah, it definitely felt samey to some of the things like Hell Yeah or Gladstones that have been coming out recently.
Yeah,
but I still thought it was interesting. I mean, it's definitely something I'll read more of. I don't think it's the best of that stuff.
No, but
but it's still good, and it's still better than a lot of other stuff.
That is true.
Yeah. It actually reminded me of Hell Yeah a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a little, yeah, it's a little better just because I don't know why. The art's a little better. And
yeah, and it's just it's the pacing is really good in it. It kind of moves along really well, and you get a sense of the world really fast, and you kind of get an idea of these characters' personalities really fast.
It's a solid setup.
Yeah, it's like a kind of a better high concept than Hell Yeah is in a lot of ways. It's just like, what would you do? Or what
we'll have to talk about issue two.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
one of those cases.
Yep. Yeah. All right, so another number one that came out this week, or actually this one came out last week, was Fanboys versus Zombies. Man, I hate that title so much.
Yeah, me too.
By Sam Humphries, who we've come to like a lot. He's writing the new Ramon Perez, John Carter thing, and he wrote Our Love is Real, which is, I mean, if you guys haven't read that, that's a book that everybody should check out.
Yeah.
With art by Jerry Gaylord. I will say the art in this I wasn't a huge fan of.
Me neither.
Yeah.
It cycled between good and not good.
It fits the tone.
Sort of.
Yeah. But, the basic setup of the story is it's this group of friends who meet at Comic-Con every year. Like, they were friends in high school, and they've kind of drifted apart, but they always meet at Comic-Con. But that's even kind of started to fall apart because of all their inter-friendship problems that they're having, you know, with
relationships
and stuff. And, but basically, they're all kind of there anyway, even though they're not all hanging out together. Yeah. Well, they're called, like, the Wrecking Crew or something like that.
Yeah.
And then zombies.
Zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, basically, I mean, it's you get exactly what you get, you expect to get from the cover. The thing is, when I first saw this, I was like, oh, God, really? And then I was like, oh, Sam Humphries, that sounds good. And then I was like, but still. And then, like, when I read it, I was like, this is pretty good. This is, like, kind of what I expected, but a little more, it's, like, a little more well-written, and the characters are interesting and kind of funny. And, you know, it's still not, like, something I would, like, be dying to read more.
Yeah. It's like he had some really good riffs of, like, some clever ideas and some cool character twists and stuff, and then he had some other stuff, like, not clever, you know, just where you're like, oh, really? You gotta say that.
I mean, there's a lot of that kind of nerd prom, 40 year old virgin, geeks and dorks, and it's just like,
yeah,
that
there's
kind
a lot of references to stuff at Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's just, it's a little tired at this point.
The one thing that kind of makes this a little better, just because, like, it's like your typical, like, zombie apocalypse starting story, but the thing is that these are giant nerds, so they know about zombies, which will be kind of interesting going forward, like.
Yeah, I mean, that is part of, like, say what made Shaun of the Dead interesting was that these were guys that were very aware of, like, zombie tropes and stuff.
Right.
But, you know, Shaun of the Dead was already interesting, and this is definitely less interesting than that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's the whole kind of fanboy. I mean, fanboy is not even a word you really hear that much anymore, just because it was used so much.
Yeah.
And that, the whole kind of geek culture thing, I mean, I know I work at a comic store, but it really gets on my nerves a little bit. It's like this kind of like romanticized, ghettoized nonsense.
Yeah.
And mixed with zombies, which are, you know, who wants to read another zombie book at this point? So for me, this was not the best. Sam Humphries has a lot of stuff coming up pretty soon that looks pretty interesting. Especially, I really want to get my hands on Sacrifice.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get that at some point and be able to review that.
Anyway, this one, though, at the other thing I'll say that makes this worth checking out is only $1 for the first one.
It is $1.
So,
yeah.
If you're even remotely interested, check it out.
I wouldn't pay $1 for it.
Really?
I really wouldn't.
Wow.
Yeah. If I came into the store, I would not buy this.
I'm thinking if I was not reading it for free and I was just walking in and I saw it on the shelf, I would immediately just be like, nah.
Yeah.
And then I would be like, oh, Sam Humphries writing it.
And then you flip through it and then you'd be like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I might read the second issue just to see if it goes somewhere.
If the idea of a zombie apocalypse at Comic-Con appeals to you, then that's all.
Well, and that will be a thing that will appeal to some people, which sounds really patronizing when I say that. But so that's what that is.
Yeah.
All right, so like I said, we're going to talk about Flex Mentallo next week because there's so much good stuff. But
and I want to reread it.
Yeah, I kind of want to reread it too.
I want to just read it.
I will say it's one of the best graphic novels I've ever read in my entire life. Ooh, but
spoilers.
Spoiler alert. But next up, we're going to talk about Freedom Number 1 by Seamus Heffernan. Jared, I know you were a big fan of this.
I did. So this is one of the, believe, the last of the Zurich Grant award winners. Which the Zurich Grant was started up by Peter Laird from the Turtles books.
Yeah.
With all of his Turtles money.
Yeah, the guy that wrote Planet Racers.
Heck yeah. And basically the idea was that they would give out money to a group of people who submitted a promising comic book to help them publish it. So sadly, this year Grant is no longer with us, but this did win it last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all done.
Oh,
Turtles money's gone, yeah. Apparently.
I always felt that the Zirik was really uneven, though.
Sure.
There have been great things, but I feel like it's really uneven. I mean, maybe Peter Laird's not the greatest tastemaker.
I think there was like a group of people who did it, but I think it's also just like some people submitted to it and other people just didn't know about it. It wasn't like
with the Zirik.
Everyone knew about the Zirik Award.
Yeah,
you know. But anyway, this one won, and so thanks to that, we get it for only $7. A very nice, oversized kind of magazine style. Yeah. Comic, which I found fascinating because I'm a huge history nerd. So this is set during the Revolutionary War era in America.
Before the Revolutionary War. During the start of it. It's like the very beginnings
we'll
of
get,
it.
We'll
no,
get to that.
Not quite.
We'll get there. Exactly. I didn't get that till the end. What we're hitting at is basically, so there's this young kid who's, 12?
Yeah.
14? Very young kid.
Yeah, I would say he's probably not any older than 12.
Yeah, set in the American colonies, and his older brother. And there's tension, revolutionary times. There's British Marine soldiers stationed all over the city keeping order, but yeah. A lot of them are kind of on edge. There's like mobs and stuff. There's a lot of tension. There's a group of secret American patriots who are saying, wearing masks and stuff, saying we need to rebel against the crown and like do all this sort of stuff. And it's just them getting caught up in drama and tension.
Yeah. So this is what? This is 1779?
Yes.
So
that's what I didn't realize. So the twist on this is apparently there was a revolution and the American colonists lost and were put down.
Okay, yeah, because I was a little
alternate history.
I was a little confused by the date and like what was happening.
Yeah,
I was really confused.
I totally missed the date. I just thought, wow, what an interesting twist of like having secret societies fighting and trying to get people riled up. But apparently, alternate history and war over.
Well,
revolution over. Anyway,
I felt a little bit of that near the end because,
yeah,
I mean, part of the story is about the what was he called, the eagle?
Yeah,
the
Liberty Eagle.
The Liberty Eagle is some sort of crazy
like
mascot slash monster.
Yeah, who's kind of an underground like urban legend. Who's like a guy who's fighting the redcoats.
Yeah,
and these two brothers are getting wrapped up in this world. Basically, they're just. When they leave their house, they're just going to deliver goods.
Boston or wherever.
Yeah,
out in the country.
But basically, they find a group of lobsters, as they call them,
the redcoats,
kind of harassing this woman and the younger kid.
Yeah, the kid's very like, we need to fight for our freedom, and the brother is much more practical.
He throws an apple at one of the guys, and things. That's where things kind of go crazy. But it's kind of got. I don't want to say Star Wars, but it's got a little Star Wars-y thing going on of like the Imperial guys, and then there are these like this like kind of secret rebel group that's preparing to take them over. But when I looked at it initially, I think the art's good. There was a little bit of inconsistency in like the faces and stuff that bothered me. But as I was reading it, I didn't feel that at all. It's like it's got a really nice like crosshatch style that's I think interesting because it mimics art maybe from the same time period.
Yeah, it feels like that. Yeah.
Like it looks a little like John Tenniel or something like that. It reminds me a lot of I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that does Chris Pirate Girl.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it's all like really detailed. And
yeah, the backgrounds were incredible.
Yeah,
whenever there was like a big open scene.
Yeah, really well researched. Like everything looked like it fit in this, all the clothes and like the stuff and the taverns and everything was really cool.
But the thing that ended up standing out for me was the dialogue. Like I thought the dialogue was all really well written.
Yes.
The relationship between the two brothers is really great. And it's never over the top. I feel like everything's really subtle what's going on. Like
there's really good tension built throughout it. And there's one part where you're like, oh, God, this is bad. You know?
Yeah. But I thought it was
a couple of bad parts where you're like, oh God, what's
there's
about
one
happen?
Really bad one near the end where you're like, oh, this is not gonna be good.
Yeah. But before that, even worse.
But so probably my biggest problem with it. I mean, I really like this book, but probably my biggest problem is that this is volume one, and I'm worried that there's not going to be any more.
Yeah, I ordered more copies directly from him, and I was talking to him on email, and I was like, so when's the next one coming out? He's like, yeah, we just had a new baby. I'm like, no.
Because it definitely ends on a huge cliffhanger.
Yes. And so he's working on it, but it may be a while.
Yeah. But overall, a really good book. And, you know, I will say it does read well on its own, but it definitely ends with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, it's got a cliffhanger, but it's also got a resolution to the kind of the smaller story that happens in the book with so, like, the soldiers and stuff.
Good volume one graphic novel type thing.
Definitely worth checking out, especially for $7.
Yeah, it's amazing.
If you're a history buff.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a nice,
so good.
It's a nice format, especially if you like alternate history like Jared does.
Yep.
With his Harry Turtledove novels.
Oh, they're so good, too.
Yeah, but that's Freedom by Seamus Heffernan and Schoolbook.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right. Up next, Giants Beware softcover by Rafael Rosado and Jorge Aguirre. This book. I love
so
this
good.
Book. Nick was reading this book today. He's like, you're going to love this book.
This is going to be your favorite book.
And he was right. I do love this. So this is about a little girl named Claudette and her two friends, one who wants to be a princess. And
one's her brother, her little brother.
And her little brother.
Gaston, who wants
to be a chef and a sword maker. He wants to open a pastry shop / blacksmith.
Like her dad.
Yeah. And basically, Claudette wants to go kill this giant that is kind of looms over the town and who eats baby feet.
Yeah, the mythology of this little town they live in has a huge wall around it because there's a giant out there that used to come in and eat baby's feet, and they never defeated it. They just drove it away, and so now they have this protective wall.
So she gathers her friend who wants to be a princess, basically, by telling her that if they kill the giant, she'll be approved by the princess board.
Yep.
Yeah. And tells her little brother that their dad said that he could he would teach him how to make swords if they go. So they go with him, and they kind of have to go. It's really funny, actually, when they're like, oh, we're gonna go kill the giant, and everybody's like, yeah, sure, go have fun, you know. And then they just leave, and everybody's
go to kill the giant.
Yeah. And so it's kind of at that point tells two stories. One of the kids going through these kind of very classic Joseph Campbell, like, go through these
adventure.
Three trials to get to this giant, mixed with the two groups that are following the kids and trying to, save them basically. Yeah. Which one group is her father and his kind of best friend, a warrior guy. Yeah. And then the rest are kind of the townspeople who are, or not townspeople, like kind of the more official people from the town.
Yeah.
One is like the marquee.
Well, basically,
like
her friend's dad is the marquee of the town.
Yeah.
So he gets like a mob together to go save his daughter.
But, and the whole thing is just, it's really funny. It's really fast paced. Yeah. And it reads so well.
There's such good characters in it, and they're all developed so well, and they all have such good dialogue.
This feels like a kind of like a classic, like Disney movie kind of style. It's just so good. You can see this as like an animated movie.
It's
so
easily. Yeah.
It's so well.
Yeah. Well, Rafael Rosado is an animator, and Jorge Aguirre has written for TV.
You
and
definitely
like,
get
perfect.
All that. Yeah. You definitely get all that. Like, just even little gestures are just hilarious. And the personalities are really funny and kind of like over the top, but not too far over the top.
Like when Claudette tells Gaston that they're going to the Forest of Death, he like throws up.
Yeah.
Because he's so freaked out.
Yeah.
It's just like a lot of stuff like that. Or like the dad asks Gaston to make a ham and cheese sandwich, but he wants to be a chef. So he like comes back and he like brings like
a plate of
bread and meat and cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's so funny.
Yeah.
It's great. I don't know. It was one of the most fun books I've read in a while. And it's great for kids. Like a lot of times we talk about books that are like kids books. Yeah, I'm doing air quotes.
Right.
But like really they're written for adults to read to their kids so they don't get bored. But this is like kids will love this book.
Yeah.
Because the kids are, they're like bad kids.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah. Like adventuresome kids.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, it's the main character Claudette is so funny. And
she just wants
amazing.
To kill monsters.
She just wants to kill monsters. She's so gung-ho.
She has a wooden sword and just attacks every... Oh, so good.
Yeah. And the kind of trials they go through are
the
all really well
really
thought
good.
Out. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, the other thing about it is that, like, the monsters and things they meet on their journeys all have awesome characters, too, and stuff. But, like, there's so many hints to, like, the background of all these people that just are, like, almost throwaway but add so much to the character. Just, like, talking to your dad for, like, in two lines, he's, like, an awesome character. And they'll mention some stuff, but they don't tell you all of it.
Yeah.
The biggest, they don't have to tell you all the stuff. Yeah. Just make a story
awesome.
It's
very subtle. And the biggest thing the biggest compliment I can give is that at the end I was like, I hope there's more of this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I want to go back to this world.
Although there doesn't need to be more.
No. But there's like hints that the town that they live in is like magic is banned, and you know, they've made up these stories to keep people from leaving the town, and there's kind of this weird...
And there might be an actual good reason for doing it. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, there's a hint that there's all these other stories. Yeah. And yeah.
But I also feel like that's how you write a good story, you know? It's like you write the backstory, and then you don't put all that in, because that's not the way that things happen, you know? It's like people don't go around talking about the history of their town.
Yeah. But it's cool because it's filled with so many ideas that they could keep going.
Yeah, you know, or have another adventure in the same city with someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, either way, it's awesome. Yeah, and Jorge Aguirre is going to be at Big Planet on Free Comic Book Day, so that's awesome, too.
Pretty excited.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to meeting
him. Yeah, so read this book.
It's great.
Or make your kids read it.
Do both.
Or do both. All right, so we have four more books to talk about. We can do this, you guys.
Onward.
We'll do it. No, that's all right, because the next one's Hilda and the Midnight Giant.
So good.
This is by Luke Pearson, who wrote Hilda Folk, which was that the name of the first one?
Yeah, Hilda Folk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is a no-brow book.
Another amazing kids book this
Another
week.
Amazing kids book. This book was amazing.
So Hilda Folk was good. It was, like I said, it was one of the best ones to use their awesome coloring process for just a great color and like a beautiful look to his art.
And then this.
But it was smaller, and this one's huge.
And this one's
oversized hardcover.
Better.
Yeah.
By magnitudes.
Yes.
And not to say the other one wasn't good, but this one's just great.
No. Yeah. It's like a stronger story. It builds. The first one's definitely the first like appearance of this character, and this builds on that.
Yeah, and this one's in kind of a larger European style format where it's done in one story that's in a bigger thing. But it's like the first one established that Hilda and her mom live in this house in the middle of nowhere that's kind of in this magical world where there's magical beings all around her. And in this story, she walks outside one day and starts hearing little voices. And people start attacking her house. And then she finds out that there's this town of invisible, tiny people outside of her house that they've built their house like in the middle of. And they are at war. They've been at war with him for a while. And so because they're invisible, and so they don't know that they're there. And at the same time, running parallel to that is there's a giant who is in basically invading their house. So it's kind of, you know, these two stories kind of tie together as, you know, it's like getting bigger and bigger. Like there's these tiny people, and then there's these normal, you know, human sized people, and then there's a giant. So.
And by giant, Nick means something the size of a mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which her mom doesn't believe exists, even though she's clearly
knows
like trolls and other monsters.
And other giants,
around.
But just not giants that big.
That egg,
yeah. I think the scale was like the most interesting part about it. Like, there's like one of the small people hides inside of Hilda's ear, and then Hilda's in the giant's ear.
Yeah, that's true.
And I thought that was really cool. The reason why they're at war is hilarious, because basically the new prime minister of the elf town was elected on the platform of like ridding the elf country of this house, which I think is really funny.
Yeah, and he's like, we've always been at war, but no one's ever done anything about it. Yeah,
but I like the fact that so much of the crazy kind of folklore monster creature stuff is established, but then there's kind of this other secret world. So like things will happen, like
they're like, here's the migration of the crazy flying dog creatures or whatever.
Right. Like, and it's like this beautiful thing with these like crazy cat things flying by. But
he's
then
such a good artist.
Yeah, it's got a very like Miyazaki Studio Ghibli kind of like feel. Like it reminded me of My Neighbor Totoro in ways.
It's like very simple but really detailed at the same time, which is hard to explain. And the cool thing is it benefits from this larger format because, you know, it's got giants in it. So
that's true.
You can draw a giant and, you know, have a tiny little drawing of a person in the bottom, which is cool.
Yeah, it's such a simple story, but like there's
it's such a good one,
but it's just so well delivered,
and there's so much depth to it too, especially the stuff with the giant and what happens at the end, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And Hilda, like we talked about before with Hilda Folk. Hilda's a great character. She really sets up a lot of the story and really impels it forward just by being, you know, this really adventuresome girl again. It's great.
Yeah, it's great. I feel like there's not a ton to say about it just because it is, you know, it's just well delivered, beautiful, simple, and it's great.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got Pete and Miriam. This is a new graphic novel by Rich Tomasso. It looks a lot like a Drawn and Quarterly book, but it's put out by Boom.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It even has a like a logo on the front that looks like the Drawn and Quarterly logo, which is really weird. But Rich Tomasso did one Miriam book a couple years ago. And yeah, but this is like a much bigger story than that. Basically, it's about Miriam and
her friend Pete.
I'm like, what's the guy's name? Oh, wait, it's Pete, because this is called Pete and Miriam. And it kind of flashes between different... they've been friends since they were little kids, and it's the story is broken up into different chapters that are from different points in their lives. Mostly, I feel like the main story is when they're in film school together as, you know, late teens, early 20s. But then it flashes back to when they're like 8, 12.
It flashes ahead, I think, at some point.
Yeah, at one point.
Like when Pete's off doing his own thing for a little while. And
But this is very much in the kind of Adrian Tomine vein with a... In story, like storytelling wise, and the art is reminds me of Dan Clowes a lot, maybe a little too much.
Yeah, very much in the Clowes style. We were arguing about this today that I thought it was better than Clowes in some ways, and they were trying to punch me in the face. But it's kind of a combination of those two, where it's like a very not stiff, but like trying to be very realistic in a simple cartooning way, and yet dealing with very just like, here's people walking around town and, you know, sitting around on a couch and having emotional arguments with each
talking
other.
Talking about Roman Polanski.
Yeah, that's one thing. There is a lot of stuff about Roman Polanski's early career in this, which I think is interesting.
Weird tangents about it, too.
Yeah, but I just... I think things like that are more interesting when I feel like they are kind of
like tied to
thematically
the
related to the story, and I wasn't really getting that with this. Maybe I was just missing that connection, or maybe it was just a little too tenuous.
I don't think there wasn't.
Yeah,
but I wasn't really seeing it.
I'm rethinking over the... Because they could have dealt with any Polanski stuff, but they're dealing with a lot of his early work when he's like... Stuff I didn't know about, like when he was trying to break out of Poland's, like... You know, still communist film industry and stuff, and I don't see much connection.
I mean, I think that stuff is interesting.
Oh, I was fascinated.
I just felt maybe the story wasn't written to it, or it just wasn't well matched. I don't know. It seems like maybe it was just a thing that Rich Tomasso was interested in while he was writing this or something.
That's one of the weird things about this. Like, I really liked it.
Yeah, I liked it as well. I should say that.
At the same time, I was a little conflicted. It seems like to not really end.
Yeah, it seems like if you took like Ghost World or something and took out like the beginning and end chapters, you know, and you just have all the stuff, but it doesn't have what the story was trying
to tell.
Not
even the end chapter. It just felt like a lot of good parts of a story, but then I don't feel that there was enough of a cohesive story throughout to, I don't know.
Which I think can be okay, but it just wasn't.
It's a little like, the thing is, like, the last 20 or so pages are like not about the main characters, which is really weird.
And it doesn't even really come back to the main characters.
Yeah, it comes back to them and it's like it's over. It's weird.
Yeah, I did like it.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was satisfied by this book, but now that you're talking about it, I'm like, I definitely wanted more.
It just never quite got on the ground. It was never quite as emotionally engaging as I felt maybe it should have been, or I don't know.
Like, everything didn't, like, all the segments were really good, and every segment was interesting and fascinating, but they didn't really come together at all very well.
That's a really good
kind of seemed like random events happening that weren't tied together. Really.
Right. So if you wanted Rich's Tomasso's anthology about Pete and Miriam short stories, this is awesome.
Yeah, but I still think it's good. And I think people that do like stuff like, you know, Ghost World or David Boring or, you know, Optic Nerve stuff, the good Optic Nerve stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's worth reading, but I just don't think there's just something about the execution that just doesn't quite.
It's slightly off.
Yeah. It's just
really
slightly
good.
Off.
It's just slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I think we're damning with faint praise, but you know.
Yeah, well, but it's not. But it's not great, though.
No,
it isn't.
It's missing that little bit of tying everything together and kind of. I don't. It doesn't need to be like perfectly tied together. Just like a little bit. Like it's like really random near the end, and you're just like, what?
Yeah, it's like if I think about things that feel similar to me, like Ghost World, or like Summer Blonde, or like some of the Crickets, like Crickets 3, the Sammy Harkham thing.
Yeah,
I feel like there are stories that are similar to this that are done in a better way.
Yeah.
And I just, and even other Rich Tomasso stuff, like I love 8.5 Ghosts.
Yeah.
And some of his other stuff. I just, there's something about this that just, it's just a little bit off, like Nick said.
Okay.
But I don't know, but still good.
Yeah, it's hard to describe.
Yeah. All right. So next up we've got, It's so funny to me sometimes, like, the way these things, like, it's... Yeah,
the titles
know,
come out.
Yeah, or yeah. Just, like, just, you know, like, it's like, we talk about Pete and Miriam, and now we're going to talk about Secret number one. It's just so weird. Comics are weird.
Shifting gears.
Yeah. But this is by Jonathan Hickman. Yep. Who most people would know from Transhuman. No, he writes he writes Fantastic Four, and he did like Nightly News, Pax Romana. He's done a ton of stuff, and most recently Manhattan's Project.
Which I keep calling Manhattan's Projects too. Like, really weird.
And this is drawn by Ryan Bodenheim. I don't know who that is.
Nope.
But he's the guy that drew Secret number one.
Really familiar. Didn't he do Red Wing or something else?
Is it? I don't think it's the guy that did Red Wing.
No, he did something familiar. Yeah. But anyway.
But this is a kind of a story about corporate espionage and stuff.
It's kind of like extreme corporate. Yeah. They're just like, you know, torture.
Extra extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$20.99.
I don't even know how to even describe it. It's pretty basic.
Yeah, there were definitely like trailers or like sample pages in a bunch of other comics recently where it showed the first four pages where guys basically torturing someone for information about something or to force them to do something.
Yeah,
that's the opening of the comic.
He's not really torturing him.
He pulls out his tooth.
He does pull out his tooth. That's torturing.
he pulls out his tooth and then he tells him all these crazy things.
Right.
And the guy's like, oh, I'll tell you my secrets. And then
so he tortured him to tell him his secrets.
Like, yeah, it's kind of like the twist where, like, I don't even know how to, if I should even tell you about the twist.
Yeah, that's
there's like a twist, but basically this guy is goes to this company, is like, I found out all these secrets about you. I know this thing and that thing and all these bad things you've done. I'm not going to tell anybody about that, but I want you to hire me to fix your security problems. And that's the basic setup, a little bit of a twist at the end. There's not really much more than that.
Yeah, it's like they're also trying to gain like more access, and it's weird.
Yeah, he's like, I want full access to everything, so we can, you know, secure everything. You know,
but it's pretty obvious that people have, you know, sort of secondary duplicitous intentions, even though what they're already doing is like,
yes,
duplicitous. It's really weird. It's kind of. It kind of flips and takes like too many twists and turns for a first issue before like
settling up on what it's trying to do.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to tell Jonathan Hickman how to write a story here because I mean, I think he's really good and I think that this will go somewhere, but I feel like, you know, we don't know where we start in this story. It's like just start happening and it's,
you know, so we don't have like the grounded foundation of what's about to change or what we should expect.
Yeah. Like typically in a story, you'll have, you know, the kind of showing where things are when they start. And then you have this inciting incident that changes things. And this kind of starts right where the inciting incident.
Yeah. So we don't have any setting to it.
Yeah. But. Which is kind of interesting too, because you don't really know like who's the good guy maybe and who's the bad guy in this situation.
And
or
the thing is the dialogue.
Everybody's a bad guy.
Yeah. You don't know who to root for. And the dialogue's so well written that I didn't have a problem with any of that. You know,
right.
I was just,
it didn't bother me. I had a little trouble finding my grounding in the story. It's
I think that's kind of part of it. Like, you're not supposed to be rooting for anybody, really. You're just kind of like, what, you know?
Yeah, along for a
you're
crazy
caught
ride.
Up in the
I was definitely like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I mean, there are also writers that do that stuff really great, like David Milch, who did Deadwood and Luck and stuff, and they just throw you right in the story. I feel like with comics, there's always like kind of, or with novels as well, of like that first initial like couple pages where you're kind of getting used to the style, and usually they kind of ease you into it. And with this, you're just kind of thrown right into it.
I will say this is the least crazy of the Jonathan Hickman books, I think,
so far.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Fairly straightforward.
Yeah, there's no time travel or anything in it.
There's no crazy science stuff.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I'd be curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, this is definitely a strong what happens in second issue kind of story.
Yeah, there was like a kind of a twist at the end, but then I was like, what does this mean exactly?
Yeah.
Yeah, a twist that kind of calmed things down a little bit almost. So
yeah, kind of pulls things together a little bit.
So maybe
so we'll see where it
intriguing.
Goes.
Intriguing.
I'm intrigued.
Yes.
Yeah. And the art is good.
Yeah, it's not like amazing, but it fits the story. And
it's a little light on backgrounds and some other things. I wasn't a big fan of the coloring.
No.
But
yeah, it's weird. It's got like not that much color. It's got like three colors.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like how some of that kind of like The Surrogates was colored or light or something like that. But overall, I mean, an interesting start. It's Jonathan Hickman. I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, definitely. Yeah. All right. So speaking of books with secret in the title. Next up, we have Secret Service Number 1 of 7. This is by Mark Millar, and Dave Gibbons.
Yeah.
You'll know Dave Gibbons from...
books as...
Green Lantern Corps. he drew Watchmen. And Mark Millar, you know, he wrote a bunch of mean comics.
Yeah.
some really, nice comics, too, which is really...
Superior
good.
Was pretty...
Superior and Marvel 1985.
Millar started in, I believe, Superman Adventures.
Yeah.
He did, and those are great, actually.
Yep.
Yeah, with Stephen T. Siegel.
Yeah,
I usually not to be confused with Steven Seagal.
Yeah, it's weird because I like both the really mean stuff and the really nice stuff.
Yeah,
in different for completely different reasons, I guess.
Well, this book starts off pretty mean.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, but this seems a little more lighthearted. I don't.
Do you remember what happens with a certain parachute?
Yeah, but it's like it's funny. Like it's not it's like a dark, it's not really mean. It's
humor.
Just kind of goopy and funny. Like. I mean, I could just say what happens. Basically, in the beginning, it starts off like a James Bond type thing where this guy's like, Mark Hamill's been kidnapped.
Yeah, Mark Hamill's been kidnapped. That is what happens.
And this guy's like, I'm going to save you. And he's all like, you know, really cool. And he like does all these crazy things, like kills all these guys and it helps him escape on like a snowmobile.
Yep.
And like, you know, everything's going perfect, like a James Bond movie. And then he's like, we got this. And then they fly off a cliff on the snowmobile. And the guy's like, oh, how are we going to get him? And he's like, don't worry. This parachute's perfect for both of us. And then the parachute doesn't go off and they crash and it explodes.
And Mark Hamill dies.
Which is really, it's kind of mean-spirited, but it's more like.
It is total. I mean, it is lighthearted, but it is mean-spirited.
Yeah, but it's more like funny. It's not like, you know, like screw you guys or whatever. Like, it's just funny. And then like. And then, you know, then it introduces the main character who's like this kind of, I don't even know what to call him, like kind of a...
He's a badass Secret Service guy.
No, like the kid.
Ah,
I feel like the kid's the main character. Yeah. He's like kind of a crappy
pseudo-delinquent, like almost on the edge of being real trouble, but just this kind of aimless kid living in Britain.
Yeah.
And it ends up that people have been kidnapping... Like characters from sci-fi
like
franchise.
Sci-fi
They're stuff. Like six people have been kidnapped from the Star Wars franchise cast and crew, and like people from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It's like such a weird thing.
Premise of.
What, and then it kind of ends.
There's a little hint at like something that's about to happen. And then it ends. It's very, it's very sparse.
Well, the other character they throw in is a guy who works for MI6 in the British Secret Service, who is this delinquent kid's uncle.
Yeah,
and
right.
That is the connection.
I felt like there was a lot put into the opening scene, and then it kind of ends at a weird point. Like, the first issue ends at a weird point for me where, like, we talk about so many things end with, like, a twist or, like, a cliffhanger, and I feel like this just kind of, like, cuts off.
It's like a twist, where you're, like, you expect it to be good.
Yeah.
Like,
it's an implication of something that if you'd had one more line of dialogue, you'd have been like, twist! And now you're like, maybe twist. Maybe this is there.
Which is fine. You don't have to have a twist in every issue. Yeah. But, I actually just thought this was okay.
Yeah.
I typically am a fan of Dave Gibbons, but I thought his art in this wasn't the best. I mean, I thought it was...
I thought it was good.
I thought it was just all right.
I thought it was good, as good as it's usually. But, I don't know. The thing that I think surprised me about this is that I thought it was a lot more... I thought it was going to be really serious and really, like, kind of, you know, like, dark Mark Millar stuff, but it was, like, more... Just like goofy and weird.
Yeah. All of his comics are goofy, though. He's never written a serious comic.
But they're not like, I don't know. It's just
like
it's so much more goofy than.
Like goofier than Kick-Ass?
Yeah.
Really?
Kick-Ass is goofy, but it's pretty brutal.
But just the Mark Hamill thing's the goofy part, just because it's Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is. No, I mean, it's definitely.
The story's goofy. I mean,
the story is goofy.
There's like. Sci-fi people being kidnapped.
It's ridiculous.
It's a weird book.
Yeah.
I liked it. I'm definitely intrigued.
It definitely feels different than his other books.
Yeah.
Like Super Crooks and Nemesis and Kick-Ass and Superior all kind of have a similar, you know, even though they're different from one another, they, you know, you can kind of, like if I read this and I didn't know it was him, I don't know that I would guess that
it's true.
I feel like, this was like supposedly it was him and Dave Gibbons kind of came up with this idea together.
Oh, I think it was co-plotted with...
With Dave Gibbons?
No, Matthew Vaughn, I think.
Oh, was it?
Oh, the director?
That's weird.
Yeah.
That is weird.
I'm going to look in the credits.
Because I know that like it was like something that him and...
Matthew Vaughn, co-plotter.
Wow.
Strange.
That's weird. Yeah, because I know it's something that him and Dave Gibbons talked about a while back, and they were just like, let's do this comic.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I'm going to read it. It's Mark Miller.
Yeah,
that beginning was like, when they just said Mark Hamill,
yeah,
I was like, wait, Mark Hamill? And then, because it doesn't look like Mark Hamill.
No, exactly. There's enough references.
Does. Once they say it's Mark Hamill, you're like, oh, yeah. That's
cool. Yeah, but there are enough references. I'm like, that's weird that they're using Mark Hamill as a name. And then on the other, I'm like, it was the Mark Hamill.
Yeah, because it's chubby modern day Mark Hamill. So
yeah.
He looks a little weird.
It was weird. Yeah. So that's it for her reviews. That was a lot of stuff this week.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a lot of stuff.
Which means it's pretty much it for the podcast. Actually, I wanted to mention one thing I saw today. Did you guys see they're making Thief of Thieves into a TV show already?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Not really. You get a successful show like Walking Dead, they'll be like, what else have you got, Robert Kirkman?
Yeah. So.
Ideas that I'll make other people write as comic books so I can make a TV show.
Exactly. I guess it's cheaper than Invincible.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, oh, God, I'd love to see an Invincible TV show. Not just that crappy MTV motion comic thing.
Look at HBO Invincible series. Would be great.
It'd be pretty good. All right, so that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with like a ton more stuff that we didn't talk about this week. So, and hopefully not too much other new stuff for next week, but we'll see what happens. And you'll see what happens, too.
You'll hear what happens.
You'll definitely hear what happens. All right. We'll see you guys later.
Bye-bye.